go ahead and call the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order for February 28th at 1:33. And we have a lot of items on the agenda today. And bills previously heard, Senate Bill 138, third-party charges on telephone bills. Sponsor Senator Wilkowski. Senator, welcome to the chambers. Also, Senate Bill 174, oil and gas industry job notifications. Sponsor Senator French. There's a further referral to finance. Senate Bill 190, Big Game Commercial Services Board, has a further referral to judiciary, and we will hold public testimony on that one. And we plan on holding that bill to the next meeting. Senate Bill 157, cancellation of insurance on certain vacant property, has a further referral to Community Regional Affairs. And it's our intention to move the bill out of committee today. And then House Bill 116, we still have not, or I'm sorry, Senate Bill 116, Workers' Comp, Collective Bargaining Mediation, we still have not received a CS from Ledge Legal, so we are going to hold that bill to a future meeting. We're still waiting to get the CS. Right off the bat, Senate Bill 138, third-party charges on telephone bills. Senator Wilkowski, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm a state senator representing Northeast Anchorage, Mountain View, Muldoon, and Russian Jack. With me today is Thomas Presley, from my an intern with my office. And we do have a CS that we've worked with Billing Services Group, Department of Law, and I know my Thomas has been around to talk to a number of committee members, or committee aides anyway, to make sure people understood the bill.
Yeah, and I don't know. There's something to
stop right there.
Past that.
Yeah, before we get going, I would move that we bring the CS for Senate Bill number 138 version /R before this committee for purposes of discussion.
Seeing no objection, Senator.
Yeah, I'm going to turn it over at this point to Thomas. I don't know how you'd like to proceed, Mr. Chair. Do you want him to explain the changes or
you know
what your preference is? Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Thomas Presley, intern for Senator Wilkowski. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this committee again about SB 138. Since we last discussed this bill, we've made a lot of progress. Before you, you'll find the CS version R. This version reflects input from both Billing Services Group, who testified at our last hearing, and the Department of Law. I would like to thank Billing Services Group for their help in creating a new draft of this bill. Their expertise in the area of third-party billing has been appreciated. You will also find an updated zero fiscal note from the RCA in your packets. The changes to the CS backslash version R are as follows. In Section 1, the definition for a telecommunications carrier has been limited to a single definition. Previously, this definition read, quote, those who are eligible for universal service funds. This change was made because previous language captured wireless carriers, which is not the intent of SB 138. Section 3, subsection D, which gave regulation making authority to the RCA, was removed and placed in Section 1. This was done because the RCA's jurisdiction is defined by statutes 4205. Sections 2 through 4 of the bill are written into consumer protection statutes. In Section 3, subsection C, the language of the exceptions was cleaned up on advice from attorney Stuart Gehring at the RCA. The previous language was redundant. In Section 3, subsection C, part 4A, we've incorporated suggestions from Billing Services Group in order to clarify how express authorization is obtained and verified. Section 3, subsection D, defines billing agent and express authorization. Section 3, subsection D, part 3, makes the definition of telecommunications carrier inclusive of landline telephone bills only. Previously, the definitions unintentionally captured wireless carriers. I believe this bill, despite the many changes it has gone through, comes before you today as a well-designed, finished product. I've had multiple conversations with both the Department of Law and Billing Services Group to reconcile potential disagreements. The current draft you see before you has been circulated since Monday of last week so I believe that all the interested parties have had ample time to express their concerns. Again, thank you for your time and attention, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Great, TJ, thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Senator Giesel.
So this concept of cramming is not a problem for wireless, for cell phones?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel. There has been evidence in the Senate, U.S. Senate committee report that there is a growing concern that wireless telephone bills may also be subject to unauthorized charges, but currently draft legislation in other states as well as the FCC is only investigating landline telephone bills because it's a different issue with cell phone bills in terms of regulations, who can regulate cell phone wireless carriers, as well as how the third-party billing platforms work for cell phones are a little bit different. So to keep things clear, things are being dealt with on a landline level now only, not on a wireless bill level.
Sir Giesel.
So just in follow-up, so the FCC's open docket is on landlines, and that's true also of the FTC?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, that is correct. The FCC does have the open docket, and that is related to landline telephone bills. In their notice of proposed rulemaking, they did take comments on wireless wireless carriers, and that did become an issue. But the docket itself does not address policies to eliminate wireless cramming, no.
Senator Giesel.
And how about the Federal Trade Commission?
The Federal Trade Commission has only pursued cases against landline telephone bills that have been accused and found guilty of third-party telephone cramming for landline carriers.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Further questions of the committee? Just a comment, I guess. I appreciate the changes that you've made to this bill, but I think that we're going to have another committee substitute in a couple of years that's going to have to address cell phones because it's expanding so rapidly, and I just a warning that I think we're going to have to address that sooner than later. But Senator Blakowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just address that briefly. Under my understanding of the laws, and Tom, TJ can clear it up for me if I speak incorrectly, but the state of Alaska can only capture cell phones for certain parts of Alaska for rural telecommunication carriers. Is that correct, TJ?
For carriers of last resort is what they're called. So if there is a in the bush, if they do not have a landline telephone carrier that can reach them, then in that case the RCA has jurisdictional authority over wireless telephones that will be used out there, yes, because they are carriers of last resort only.
So if that was their only mean of communication, then they would be allowed to address that issue then?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Further questions from the committee? Pleasure of the committee.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we move the CS for Senate Bill 138 version /R from this committee to the next committee or referral with newly revised zero fiscal note.
Is there objection?
And individual recommendations that I see.
Yeah, and attached fiscal note. Zero. Thank you, Senator Pascvan. Objection? Seeing none. I'll take a brief at ease.
Thank you.
reconvene Labor and Commerce at 1:45. Next on the agenda, Senate Bill 174. And if you remember, we had an amendment for 174 from version M to version I. And Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I had submitted an amendment. And my amendment focused on addressing all industries in Alaska as far as making job opportunities available. Now, Mr. Chair, in the second sentence of the sponsor's statement, the focus and the intent was to encourage more Alaska resident hire, which I think we all admire that goal. Part of the purpose of my amendment was to promote that on a broader scale to all industries and to include folks that live off of the broadband network. You know, unintended consequences sometimes occur, and if we just put it on internet, that could exclude a lot of people. The other thing I wanted to point out, Mr. Chair, is, you know, while we're focused on the hiring of Alaska residents, I came across this report on my desk for the Alaska Training Program, Performance 2010. And it was interesting, Mr. Chair, to see that Kotzebue has an Alaska Technical Center, a training center for these types of jobs, and only 87% of those students are Alaska residents, using the definition that Department of Labor uses as far as receiving a permanent fund dividend. The Alaska Institute of Technology, 80% residents are their students. Galena Learning Academy, 57% Alaska residents are learning through that educational opportunity. So it really points out what I think you and I know, Mr. Chair, from being lifelong Alaskans, that Alaskans are made up of both residents and non-residents, and those non-residents become residents. This is a pretty unique committee in that three of the five of us are born and raised Alaskans, but that's not true of the general population. The other interesting thing that happened since our last committee meeting, Mr. Chair, is I was listening to a radio interview of former Representative Harry Crawford. Now, the former representative is from the state of Louisiana, and in his interview, he talked about coming to Alaska in 1975 and how Alaska was a refuge. He regarded it as a refuge to him because when he came, no one asked him where he was from or who he knew. What they asked him is, what can you do? And he rapidly received a job, got a job, and has been here ever since. And he said, you know, nobody here cares where you're from or who your mama is. Just what can you do? And welcome to Alaska. And so that's my purpose in this amendment, Mr. Chair, is to post all these job opportunities, regardless of how high-paying they are or where they're offered or what the industry. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask that we adopt the amendment.
Great. Thank you, Senator Giesel. Discussion?
My objection, I guess, to the extent of that is this includes a burden with respect to newspapers and other publications distributed throughout the state, and I just think that the way that the bill is drafted, which requires posting on the internet-based labor exchange system distributed to job service organizations and the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, I think that that's satisfactory, and so I formally object.
Great. Thank you, Senator Passavant. Further objection on the amendment? Object. So we can take a brief ideas and.
Well, then,
May I ask for a vote, please? Roll call vote.
Before we take a roll call vote, are you not going to even ask the speaker or the sponsor of this bill
to speak
to the amendment?
And then we're going to bring up Senator French and get. His changes in his versions, unless I'm mistaken. Senator French. I'm sorry.
I'm here at the beckoning of the chairman. I'm happy to address the amendment. I think
you speak to the, okay.
Senator Passman has stated my objections. It's the expanding cost. Thank you.
Senator Diesel.
Yes.
Senator Menard.
No.
Senator Davis.
No.
Senator Passman.
No.
Senator Egan.
No.
Four no's, one no.
Thank you. Senator French, if you can explain Senate Bill 174 changes again. And Ms. Smith, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, do I need to bring the CS?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move that we bring the CS for Senate Bill 174 version /I before this committee for purposes of discussion.
Object. Sir French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see that the drafters are moving backwards now in the alphabet, which is a little unusual, but yeah. Nevertheless, you do have version I before you. And what it does in Section 1 on page 2, you'll see it lines 4 and 5 in B1. It deleted reference to the Alaska Online Public Notice System and replaced it with the language that says the Internet-based Labor Exchange System operated by the department. They have a specific name for it called Alex or Alexis. They're concerned that the name might change in the future, so they've asked us just to call it by this sort of brand name or generic name so that if it does change in the future, there's no conflict between the name in the real world and the name of the statute. Also in Section 1 on page 2 at lines 16 to 19, the provisions of D2 are expanded to include AS 4390-130 subsection 15, that's the AGEA bill, in addition to the provision below it, which refers to the Alaska Sarnia Gas Development Act. The AGEA provision was missed in the first drafted bill, and so we've added this at the behest of the drafters. I think I actually just reversed the occurrence of the two references in the bill. The first is the reference to Stranded Gas Act. The second is to AGEA, but they both are local hire and local publication provisions within those two aforementioned acts. No changes were made to Section 2. In Section 3 of the bill, in Version M, again, we deleted the Section 3, I'm sorry, altogether was deleted. Section 3 is gone because we did take out the online public notice system referred to in Section 1, and we amended the title to conform to the changes made in Section 1. So it's a stripped-down bill that now comes before you in the CS, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator French. We also have Paul Scavera and Paul Dick from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development here to answer questions in case any members have any. Ms. Smith, do you have anything to add?
No, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Great, thank you.
I'd like to hear if the Department of Labor likes this bill, please.
Mr. Dick or Ms. Scavera, it's your choice. Thank you, Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You look great without a cast.
Thank you. It's been 4 days. For the record, my name is Paula Scavera. I'm the Special Assistant to the Alaska Department of Labor.
Senator Menard.
And I would just like your position on this, if the Department of Labor does have a position.
Well,
you just speak to that, please.
The department doesn't really understand. In some respects, the bill is redundant because anyone, any business right now can post for free on our system. So I realize you're making one industry mandate it, but anybody can do it for free right now. And it doesn't have to go through us. A business can do it by themselves, get a password, and just do it.
Senator Menard.
So I'm not encouraged by your words. It sounds like redundancy is not ever a good word in government. So I know you're being very cautious to talk around it a little bit, but I think I have your general overall take on this bill.
Through the chair, Senator Menard, right now a business can get a password and post jobs.
I understand.
This bill mandates that an oil or gas producing company with 100 more employees get this information to the commissioner's office, and the commissioner's office makes sure it gets posted. Mm-hmm. Plus, we have to notify these other entities. So it's making more work for us on something that is already being done.
I understand.
Senator, anything further?
And I too am struggling with us just zeroing in on the oil industry, because as I've had sons that have been in the fishing industry, and that truly is another entity that is not being pointed out. But it's a struggle for me. I'm not sure exactly. I have great respect for the senator that put this bill forward, and so that's why I'm in question why he's duplicating what's already available to all industries for local hire, should they want to post with a password.
I might add, through the chair, that not only do we just take postings, we also have many job fairs for industries. Mm-hmm. We have Paul may be able to give you dates better than I, but we have job fairs throughout the state prior to the commercial crab season in Unalaska. We have job fairs for the tourism industry. I invite you, in a couple weeks we're going to have a huge job fair in Juneau at Centennial Hall for lots of industries. And I'll make sure all of you members are invited to see what we do at these job fairs. So it isn't just, oh, we take an application from a business and say, you have 6 jobs available. We also do these job fairs and other outreach also.
I'm aware of that. Thank you.
Senator Baskvin.
Is my assumption accurate that this will not change the zero fiscal note?
Through the chair, Senator Pasquin, that fiscal note was for the online public notice system, which is run by the Lieutenant Governor's office. That is not, the fiscal note was prepared as the department really didn't have much to do with it. So we're going to have to take back the new CS if it passes and look at it, because now, you know, we're really in charge.
Okay. And just as a follow-up, as I understand right now, the employers that have greater than 100 employees may or may not use the system.
Through the chair, that's correct. We have businesses that have 1 or 2 employees, and we have businesses that have thousands of employees. But it's not mandatory, so the oil and gas producers who have 100 or more employees are not mandated right now.
And just so that, even assuming that they selectively at this time may or may not include a job on that system, this would just say uniformly that if there is a job, they have to at least follow this minimal process, which is at no expense to them.
Through the chair, Senator Pasquin, if I understand your question correctly, business oil and gas producers with 100 more employees are going to have to notify us, and then we're going to have to do the other notifications and online posting, and there's job service organizations and other people we're going to have to notify.
I guess the first point is that it's at no additional charge to the employer whatsoever.
through the chair, Senator Pasquin, I don't know if they internally are going to have to get somebody to notify us or any of those things, and I'm not an HR person in an oil company, so I couldn't answer that question.
Again, I'm not trying to be argumentative, but assuming they use the system right now, that is a burden that they voluntarily impose upon themselves, assuming they use the system.
Through the chair, Senator Pasquin, if they use the system right now, they're just going to have to do another step to notify the commissioner's office or the commissioner or the department.
Senator Giesel.
Paula, when you were here last week, you testified as to how many jobs were posted from oil and gas companies on that particular day.
Through the chair, yes, ma'am.
So the question is, did you happen to look today? Did you happen to notice how many today?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I didn't look today. I was dealing with other legislation, and I apologize. I can get the number for you as soon as I go back.
Yeah, and I was just looking because I think I wrote it down. It was something like 140 or some such thing.
And it varies each day.
Sure. And were you looking only at readily identifiable oil and gas companies, or were you also looking at support industries as well, like cruise construction and others?
Through the chair, we looked at it at certain code classification codes of jobs. They were not just the major oil companies.
Okay,
they were also companies that provide services or subcontractors, which I would call them subcontractors.
Okay.
Sorry, through the chair.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Senator Giesel. Further questions? I guess I just have one. Just because it's gone from the Lieutenant Governor's office now to the Department of Labor, it seems to me like it would still have a zero fiscal note. Most of this is automated. And wouldn't the Lieutenant Governor have to update all this stuff? And I mean, it seems to me like no matter where you place it, that there's a lot of automation.
Through the chair, Senator Egan, it's just I'm not the day-to-day person who does these databases, and I can't tell you that if they're going to have somebody a couple hours a week, you know, make sure that all these notifications, if the notification comes in that day, are we going to have to do it that day? Are we going to do it once a week? You know, I guess it's going to be daily. We're going to have somebody notify. It's these other entities. It's not just our database system.
Senator Giesel, thanks.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to put words in Paula's mouth, but I think on page 2 of the bill, what she's referring to is that the bill specifies that the commissioner shall cause the notification. It doesn't specify that the companies would themselves post these things on the automated system.
And I agree with Senator Giesel, but the commissioner is causing that through Alexis now.
The commissioners, through the chair, I don't deal with Alexis. I don't touch Alexis.
Well, I've been on.
The commission.
I've been on Paula.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we formed that company just to give you an example. But on a daily basis, I would say nobody in the commissioner's office deals with Alexis. It's going to be the Employment Security Division. They're the ones that do all that. Now, when a company, right now, a company enters their own data. The way this bill is written is they're going to give this data to the commissioner's office, and the commissioner's office is going to then get that data entered somehow. So it's a little bit different, and I'm not quite sure exactly how we're going to do it yet.
Neither am I. That's why I asked the question. Thank you very much, Ms. Cabrera. Further questions? Thank you very much. Senator Ferenc, did you have any final comments?
Just one, Mr. Chairman, and just one. Thank you. The only quibble I would have with Ms. Cabrera's testimony was over the word redundant. It's a surprising choice of a word, given that it's clear that all the jobs on the North Slope are not being offered on Alexis now. It's true that some are, but all are not. And the listings from Alexis are a good example. We pulled the listing as of February 23rd. There's about 25 jobs offered through BP, which is a good thing. It may be all their jobs, I don't know. But, I mean, when you look at ConocoPhillips, there's only three jobs from ConocoPhillips. These two companies are roughly the same size, employ roughly the same number of people. It stands to reason that there are some job openings that ConocoPhillips is not posting on Alexis. And so I think it's fair to say that all jobs are not being posted. So I just think that this is a minimal burden on industry. It's a minimal burden on the administration. We're just trying to get the word out. It's not meant to be, you know, create a huge new burden. We're just trying to sort of let more Alaskans know about the great opportunities for North Slope employment that exist here in the state.
Thank you, Senator French. Questions for Senator French?
This is not really a question, but I guess just assuming that it is current, they are doing it, there's zero additional burden by this bill. So, I mean, that's what I, in other words, we just want to make sure they all are, but assuming they all are now, there's no additional burden.
Right. I guess the closer the truth is to Ms. Cavera's representation, the less burden. The closer the truth is to it being a totally redundant system, there's absolutely no burden on anybody, whether industry or the administration. And if it is out of whack, I think it's only fair to post them.
Further questions, Senator French? See none? Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we move the CS for Senate Bill 174 version /I from this committee to the next committee referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And the fiscal note is zero, correct?
Yes.
And that's what we have. Okay. Is there objection? Take a brief at ease. The committee meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce for February 28th at 2:08. And next bill on the agenda, Senate Bill 190, Big Game Commercial Services Board, as a further referral to Judiciary. Sponsor is Senator Menard. And Michael Oviedo, Senator Menard's staff, will be here to present.
Mr. Chair, I move that we bring the CS for Senate Bill 190, version /M. Before this committee for purposes of discussion.
And I object. Senator Menard, if you just stay there.
Okay, thank you. And I'd like to thank the chairman and the full committee for allowing this bill to be heard. My staff and I have worked hard and with many other folks to write good piece of legislation. So with that, I'll turn this over to my chief of staff, Michael Rovito, who will introduce the legislation.
Thank you very much. For the record, Michael Rovito, Chief of Staff for Senator Linda Menard. If it pleases the committee, I'll run through the bill, kind of what it does, and then address the changes in the CS, if that's all right. First thing, we worked with recommendations from the Big Game Commercial Services Board on this bill. The board spent about 1 year working on these changes that they see beneficial to their industry and their overview of the industry. And the bill overall deals with licensing and disciplinary functions under the supervision of the board. First item, the bill will create a retired status master guide outfitter license. An individual holding a retired status license may not guide or outfit in the state, but the license will serve as a symbolic recognition of their achievement in the profession. They have five of these such retired status licenses in the medical field, and this would add one for the retired master guide outfitter license. The bill also simplifies and makes clear the relationship between a registered guide working for another registered guide. It will also eliminate the requirement that a registered guide be present in the field during a hunt if a Class A assistant guide or another registered guide working for the contracting guide is handling the hunt. Currently, in statute, if a guide contracting for the hunt would have to fly out to the site of the hunt, even if it's just to shake the person's hand who's going on the hunt, this statute change, the ability to, not do that would save money, it would save resources, because there's another guide that's actually conducting the hunt for the registered guide. That was a suggestion. This bill will also give the Big Game Commercial Services Board the ability to suspend or permanently revoke a transporter license or any class of guide license if the board finds after a hearing that the licensee engaged in conduct involving unprofessionalism, moral turpitude, or gross immorality. Further, the bill will slightly change the penalties for certain violations to allow a court to order the board to suspend a license instead of requiring the court to order the board to suspend the license. The concern here was that a minor violation might fall into the category where the court would have to order the board to suspend the license. It would give the court a little bit more leeway to determine the severity of the offense before they do or do not order the board to revoke the license. The last section simply directs the department to set a fee for that retired status license, specifically addressing the changes in the CS/M that we're hopefully working off of. There's a few changes. First, in this CS, a new section 1 was added to the CS, and what this does is it states that the Big Game Commercial Services Board, in addition to the regulations already set out in the duties of the board statute, may adopt other regulations that the board considers appropriate. This language basically gives the board the ability to adopt regulations beyond what is required by the chapter. The second change is in section 4 of the CS. The language has been added in this section to give the Big Game Commercial Services Board the ability to make regulations to change that requirement that the contracting guide be present in the field. And they can do this during the course of their normal board deliberations. And this just gives the ability to the board of the Big Game Commercial Services Board to do that as opposed to the legislature. The third change to the CS has to do with an effective date. That's section 9 of the CS. And this put the effective date for section 4, which I just mentioned, to July 1st, 2013. The reason being is the Big Game Commercial Services Board meets in March and December, and it's unlikely that this legislation will be through the legislature by the time their March meeting occurs. So this will give them the time to address the contracting guide in the field issue at their next board meeting, and then so it can go into effect the next year. The final change was the original bill did not have an effective date on it, and we clear that up by adding that the rest of the bill goes into effect immediately if passed. That is the overview of the bill and the CS, and I'm happy to take questions. I do have a representative from the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. The chair of the Big Game Commercial Services Board is here, and I believe there's a representative from the wildlife troopers online for questions.
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Raviuto, and thank you, Senator Menard. Questions for the presenter or the sponsor? Senator Giesel.
What are the five medical licenses that have a retired category?
They are, through the chair to Senator Giesel, they are chiropractic, medical doctor, physician's assistant, podiatrist, and optometrist.
Thank you.
Yep. Further questions for Mr. Raviuto or Senator Menard? Great, thank you. We'll open public testimony now. And we have, we'll take care of the first two people in the audience, and then we will go to OffNet and on the LIO. First to testify, Paul Johnson.
I don't have anything, less just questions, sir.
Just questions. Thank you very much for coming in from Elfin Cove, Paul. I'd like to be in Elfin Cove right now. But we do have Thor Stacey, Alaska Professional Hunters Association. Mr. Stacey, welcome. Can you give your name and affiliation for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Thor Stacey, and I'm representing the Alaska Professional Hunters Association today. First off, I want to affirm our support for Senate Bill 190. The working draft before you is reflects the work that's been done that was some additions done on the House side and House resources, and the changes seem appropriate. First off, I want to talk about that. This bill is the result of a pretty extensive collaborative effort by many of our members through the board process to provide input to the Commercial Services Board on statutes that have not been able to be adapted by the board process through regulation because of a more restrictive statute, a regulation can't usurp. So that's been very positive, as well as some of our older distinguished members requesting the ability to maintain an active license but not actively conduct hunts as a representation of their time in the industry and developing, you know, what we view as a very positive industry here in the state. First off, I want to reaffirm that this has gone through a two-tiered public process and an in-depth subcommittee process at the Board of Commercial Services. So this has been well vetted. We've had excellent input from the Department of from the troopers on what statutes they requested were clarified. A good example of that is the relationship between one registered guide and another, one employing the other. What exactly that registered guide is in the eyes of the law. So that clarification was very positive in this bill. And then I want to speak briefly to Section 4, which approaches supervision requirements and statutes. Supervision is a big issue for both the guide industry and our members conducting their hunts and running their businesses, as well as what the public wants from licensed professionals hunting big game animals here in Alaska. The intent of these changes is to provide to maintain a supervision requirement in statute that's permissive enough to allow the board to adopt meaningful regulations that fulfill the intent of supervision, or what a registered guide is when he's supervising either Class A assistants in the field or licensed assistant guides. The one example, one ambiguity that has been a problem was, could a registered guide leave his hunting area or leave the field to take meat out of the field, out of the hunting area, away from his camps, and would that be legal? And obviously, a registered guide wants to feel comfortable when he does operations that support his business and the quality of his hunts. He wants to make sure that he's not violating a statutory supervision requirement. So that's where a lot of the discussion came from in Section 4. The physically present in the field with the client at least once during the contracted hunt was not meaningful. It was the hinge point was the field, the definition of the field. Operators that were not supervising their hunts correctly were able to circumvent that by shaking hands with a client, signing a contract on state land outside of an area with permanent dwellings, more or less. So by removing that statute and giving the board the regulatory authority to approach supervision in a meaningful way, we very much appreciate this effort by the committee and by the legislature to help clarify that. In summation, I'd like to say that this bill, there has been some discussion on licensing standards for assistant guides. This bill does not address licensing standards in any portion of it, and there's a different forum for that discussion. And the Board of Commercial Services, the Big Game and Commercial Services Board, already has the ability to approach licensing standard, and since in the past 5 years we've raised those standards significantly. So I would like to add that to the discussion. And in summary, Thank you for your time. Thank you for your concern about our industry. As important as it is to us, we understand that not everyone's knowledgeable about what we do on public lands here in Alaska. And with that, I would make myself available for any questions the committee has.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Stacey. Questions from the committee? Senator Pasquet.
No, it's more in the way of a comment. I just wanted to thank Thor for a very thorough explanation of what they like about this Senate Bill 190, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Further questions, Mr. Stacey? Great. Thank you very much for taking the time to testify today. And we do have Don Habiger from the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing in the audience to answer questions if anyone has any. Not right now, but don't go anywhere, Mr. Habiger. And now we'll go off net. Lieutenant Bernard Chastain of Alaska Wildlife Troopers. Lieutenant, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm here today to answer questions. If anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to help out any way I can.
Great, thank you. Lieutenant, can you give your name and affiliation just for the record, please?
Certainly. For the record, my name is Bernard Chastain, and I'm a lieutenant with the Alaska Wildlife Troopers stationed at Anchorage headquarters.
Great, thank you very much, Lieutenant. Questions for Lieutenant? Senator Pasquet.
Are they okay with Senate Bill 190?
Through the chair, Member Fassman, we are fine with the changes in Senate Bill 190. One of the areas is important to us, and that was actually one of our recommendations, and that is Section 6, having to do with the removal of 08-54-720-8A and putting that in a portion that the court may decide to suspend the license of the guide. Currently, it is the way that is written currently in statute. The court is bound to, if the person is convicted, the court is bound to by a mandatory one-year suspension. By moving that to a may, it allows the court the decision to decide if that suspension is warranted or not, and we support that.
Great. Thanks, Lieutenant. Senator Pasquet, further question?
You know, I just want to thank the trooper. As I understand, then, this CS is an improvement that's been added upon by the troopers.
And through the chair, I have been involved with this. I also participate in the Commercial Services Board meetings at every meeting, and I've been involved with this at every step of the way.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much, Lieutenant. And we... Is there anyone else in the room to testify? No. So there is no one in the room to testify. So we'll remain off net. Joe Plutz, King Salmon Master Guide. Joe, if you can give your name and affiliation for the record,
yes,
please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Very good. My name is Joe Plutz. I'm a Master Guide. I live in King Salmon, Alaska. I have lived here for over 40 years and been guiding since 1976. I would like to offer my support for this legislation. I think it's an evolution of what's, I know it's an evolution of what has gone on with the Commercial Service Board since its inception. I was instrumental in helping to promote the establishment of that board back in the 90s. Suggested that they consider this a housekeeping bill, and every time I hear that term, I have to think of, on Saturday mornings, I ask my wife what's going to happen. She said, oh, a little housekeeping. Next thing I know, I'm cleaning dryer vents and freezers and everything else, but really, this is pretty upfront, and there's been a tremendous amount of public testimony and effort that's gone into to refine the points in this legislation. I think probably just personally on the effectiveness of the board, you have a lot of flexibility in regulations where you can get bound by certain statutes. This gives the board the authority to respond to federal agencies, state agencies, industry concerns, public safety, wildlife enforcement agencies, It's a process, and you get maximum level of participation when you have the provisions that have been added into this legislation. I wholeheartedly support it. I'm confident that it'll be beneficial for the industry and particularly for the wildlife resources. And I'm available to answer any questions if anyone has any.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Klutch, and for remaining online. Questions for Mr. Klutch? Great. Thank you very much. Tell everybody in King Salmon hello.
I will. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Next to testify, Lauren Carroll from Palmer. Mr. Carroll.
Thank you very much. It's Ms. Carroll. But
I'm sorry, Ms. Carroll.
That's quite all right. Through the chair, I wanted to thank Senator Minot and her staff for their work on this bill. They've been very thorough in it. I also wanted to say that Lieutenant Chastain's been really helpful, and it's really helpful having him at the meetings and working on a bill like this so we know that it addresses everyone's concerns. My name's Lauren Carroll. I live in Palmer, Alaska, and I'm a registered guide. And I want to say that I'm very strongly in support of SB 190. I'd really like to see it implemented. The only concern I have is that it contains a section to delay the implementation of Section 4 for a year until after the Big Game Commercial Services Board has a chance to meet. And my problem with that is that both of the concerns in this section are already addressed in Regulation 12AAC75.240, which says supervision, and they're already addressed in the in statute when it discussed the duties of a Class A assistant guide, and that's in AS 854.620. Other than that, I'm very strongly in support of this. Section 4 removes the problem with the in the field, which has been a problem for many years for many of us. And I want to stress that in no way does this allow a guide to sit in Florida or California condominium and conduct their hunts through somebody else. There are many places in statute and regulation that discuss the supervision required by a registered guide or a master guide in their hunts, and there's none of us that want to see that sort of thing happening. Other than that, I just wanted to say I'm strongly behind this bill, and thank you again for your work on it.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Carroll, and I apologize for calling you sir, but thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions for Ms. Carroll? Seeing none, thank you very much for staying online. Next is Dan Montgomery, Wasilla. Ms. Montgomery, if you can give your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Dan Montgomery. I'm a master guide. I've lived in Alaska 30 years, and I'm strongly in support of this bill. I've been to every commercial services board meeting for the last 5 years, and there's been a lot of work put into this bill. We aren't asking to be unsupervised, just the opposite. We're asking to be able to address concerns with some of this, the way the stuff is in statute right now, that we can't, and through this bill it will allow the board to make regulations to those concerns, and I really support, really appreciate everybody that's put all this time into it, Senator Bernard and everybody, and I'm strongly in support of this bill, and I think it's going to be very good for the industry. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Montgomery. Questions for Mr. Montgomery? Great, thank you for sticking around. And the last to testify from Matsu LIO is Wayne Kubat. Mr. Kubat.
Yeah, I'm Wayne Kubat. I'm a master guide. I live in Wasilla, Alaska. I do support the bill in its entirety, except for what two previous presenters said. You know, I worked in the Big Game Commercial Services Board. They had work sessions every twice a year for the last 5 years, and they had a lot of public participation. And we had to address this issue of in the field, both in statute and regulation, and the board has already addressed that, and they repealed the regulation. But in the field means the same or neighboring guide use area. And a lot of it, if you have a hunting lodge in the same or neighboring guide use area, it's easy to comply with. You take your hunters there, and you've met that requirement. But in my case, the nearest place is 70 miles away, and I can't buy gas there. I can't fix my airplane there. So that's been the problem with the in the field participation. The changes they made to Section 4, lines 24 through 28 on page 2, I don't understand either. You know, they want to delay implementation for a year to the board to adopt regulations permitting a Class A guide to work for a contracting registered guide. But like Lauren Carroll said, it's already in regulation and statute. Statute is 0854620 Class A Assistant Guide License. It says a Class A Assistant Guide 3 may take charge of a camp and provide guide services from the camp without the contracting registered guide outfitter being in the field and participating in the contracted hunt if the contracting registered guide outfitter is supervising the activities, the guiding activities. The regulation part in 75 AAC 240A also says a registered guide outfitter who contracts to guide a hunt shall plan, direct, and monitor the big game hunting services provided to the client. My issue is why wait a year to adopt regulations that we already have covered in statutes and regulation? Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for sticking around, Mr. Kvet. And that ends Matsu LIO. Now we'll move to Kodiak and Dick Rohrer. Mr. Rohrer, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dick Rohrer, 40-year-plus resident of Kodiak Master Guide. I'll be real brief. I think Mr. Stacy covered the issues quite clearly. So I won't repeat that. The one thing I do want to clarify, I heard Mr. Rivito just mention in Section 4 that the deletion of this would not require the contracting guide to be physically present in the field. That statement can be a bit misleading, not that that was his intent at all. I'm a contracting guide who is always in the field. I don't fly an airplane, but I'm always in the field with a client, but I have other guides guiding clients as well. The problem that this has caused for me several times over the years, I'm in a place where I have to have a certain height and stage of tide to access with a boat, then the boat goes dry for as much as a week during the series of low tides, and I can't physically get back to my base camp in case there's a client there that finishes a hunt early and wants to leave. So this correction is an attempt to allow those of us contracting guides who are actively involved in the business guiding ourselves to not get caught in a problem area. It's not designed in any way for me to not be there and oversee the hunts. So just for that clarification, I'm in support of the bill. I feel as well that it's not necessary to delay implementation. I've just completed 2 terms on the Big Game Commercial Services Board, and I think the board can work through what regulation changes we need. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much for sticking around, Mr. Rohrer, and thank you for your testimony. Further questions? Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you again. We will now go to the Fairbanks LIO, Virgil Oppenauer. Mr. Oppenauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
My name is Virgil Oppenauer. I'm a master guide as well. I came to Fairbanks, got here on April 15th, 1971. But anyway, Wayne Kubat and I, the last guy to speak from Wasilla, have hashed and rehashed this for a period of 4 or 5 years. Big game guides are the only occupation I know of where our 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution has been violated in statute. And so, taking that paragraph 8 and moving it, like Lieutenant Chastain said, because paragraph 8, if you read it, is the catch-all. I was an infantry officer. The Uniform Court of Military Justice has a catch-all in it. no matter what you do, if it's not covered, this covers it. That's what number 8 is. Basically, it says if you don't, if you fill out a piece of a form wrong, that you all of a sudden are a criminal and will automatically lose your license for a year, or the only occupation where that happens anywhere, period. But anyway, the other thing that this does, it's been spoken to by previous speakers, is it clarifies the supervision and being in the field and being able to supervise, because I fit in the same category as Dick Rohr, the last speaker, except I hunt inland, and some of my camps may be 120 to 150 miles apart. Boat gas at Hoosier, where I operate out of, is $7 a gallon. The only way I can get to my camps is by boat. And so if the wind starts blowing or something, it's impossible to leave. If a client wants to leave early, and they will leave early on you, and then you can't comply with the communications requirement that we're required to do, and so you fall under the catch-all, where you lose your license for a year if you have a guy that's a jerk for a trooper. But anyway, so what this does is clarifies it and makes it more so that we are treated like a citizen of the United States. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Umpenauer. Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for staying online and providing your testimony, and that completes public testimony. Mr. Oviedo, would you like to address any of the concerns that were brought up today during public testimony? Senator Menard? Seeing none, we will hold this bill and we'll bring it up in a short time frame. And hopefully move it out of committee. Next on the agenda, Senate Bill 157. That's cancellation of insurance on certain vacant property provided by the Labor and Commerce Committee, has a further referral to Community and Regional Affairs, and it's our intent to adopt the committee substitute, and Mr. Owen will present the committee substitute.
Mr. Chair, I move that we bring the committee substitute for Senate Bill 157, identified as version /E, before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee for purposes of discussion.
Great, thank you. I'll object. Mr. Owen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dana Owen. I'm staff to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. You may recall, I hope you'll recall, that in the last time we heard this bill, it's been a bit of a while, I expressly discussed a forthcoming amendment to the bill. We have been in discussions with several title company representatives since that time to try and hammer out some language that they felt comfortable with and would satisfy the concerns. As you may recall, the concern is that there are offshore companies soliciting this kind of business in Alaska. Their concern is that sooner rather than later we are going to see title companies who have no connection to Alaska and don't have any kind of way of ground truthing their title searches will be doing title work here in the state. So what we have crafted before you with the help of the Division of Insurance is language that we now are satisfied, and I think you will see in your packets, I hope you'll see in your packets, emails from various companies that support this language. I think we'll hear from today from people who support this language. In any event, I've heard from nobody who has been in contact with our office that they do not support this language. So if you look on, am I in the wrong? I'm on the wrong bill, aren't I?
A little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. It's been a busy day. Get back up. We are in Senate Bill 157. I'm sorry. We already passed Senate Bill 122, didn't we?
We're halfway through.
Yeah, we're getting there, but you're running out of time, Mr. Rowan.
We have enough of these five bill. You know, have any more of these five bill days? I'm going to.
Sorry. Go ahead, Dana.
We
understand.
I just want to know if all that's going to make it into the record someday.
We understand.
Yeah, /E version.
/E version. Thank you. Okay, let me back up. The last time we talked about this bill, we had a problem, or the committee suggested there was a problem with language because of the concept that insurance companies could cancel policies on property that appeared to be abandoned or unoccupied. Committee members expressed a great deal of reluctance to grant insurance companies the ability to do that because Alaskans typically have homes which they leave for long periods of time, even though they certainly intend to come back and reoccupy those homes. So the language that we have that we bring before you today is on page 2 of the bill, and it would be in line 6 and 7. This language has been suggested to us by insurance companies as using terminology, again, which is familiar to the industry, is familiar to case law, apparently. And it reads, unoccupancy or vacancy of the insured property that increases a hazard. Insured against now being, that being the old language, now being replaced by the language, vacancy of the insured property that increases a hazard insured against. In this paragraph, vacancy means entire abandonment of the property by the insured, and the property does not contain contents of substantial utility. What we have done in essence is go back to the idea of vacancy, which seemed from the testimony that we heard was something that people understood and we could define in the statute. We've removed the idea of unoccupied homes being available for their insurance being canceled. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to answer questions, and I will endeavor to stay on topic.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Owen. Questions for Mr. Owen? I want to thank you for the work you put in on this. I know there were a lot of meetings with insurance companies and representatives, and I appreciate the work that you put into it to try to reach to a consensus or come to a consensus among all parties involved. Questions from the committee for Mr. Owen? Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess if we were to just dig into the weeds and when we say vacancy, because typically when you go into a home, you might not get the refrigerator or the washer or dryer would be gone. And I just, all kinds of things are going. Of course, we're thinking no furniture, no clothes in the closets, you know, obvious. But I just didn't know how much we should specifically mention. I mean, what's for some, even in some subdivision settings, some vacancy is different than other landlords or, and I know this is the primary residency, I understand that.
Mr. Rowan.
Mr. Chairman, we do have Sheldon Winters here today who can explain more from the insurance company's point of view, but my understanding is that the terminology we're using here is in general use within the industry so that people recognize vacant property as being property that doesn't have any substantially valuable material left behind. So there may be a few items, but nothing of substantial value. That indicates to the insurance industry that house has been left vacant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bernard.
I appreciate that explanation. I don't mean to belabor this anymore, so I'm content with needing to bring it up.
Just before I call on Senator Diesel, I just, you know, there were real concerns from committee members last time that the definition of vacancy wasn't in statute. It's now in statute. Senator Diesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Menard just said she knew this bill referred to the primary residence. Can you tell me where that said? I don't see that here, but maybe I missed it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Martin, Senator Giesel, it's not my understanding that it applies to primary residence. Is it? Perhaps I'm mistaken.
If I may respond to that.
Senator Menard.
Back on my notes, when we first brought this up, I did write down primary residency under a letter of objection. So I just had written that down. Sorry, I don't see it in the bill, but I...
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that maybe I honestly can't answer that question at the moment. It's my understanding that it would apply to any insured property, but perhaps Mr. Winters can shed some light on that.
If it's okay with the committee to call Sheldon Winters forward, representing all of industry. We won't tell, Mr. Winters, if you can speak for all. If you can come forward by yourself for the record, please.
I would say Senator Bernard. My note, I am identifying it, could not have any validity, but I did have that note written down, so.
Mr. Chairman, I also point out that Linda Hall is also available for questions if we need it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Owen. Mr. Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sheldon Winters. I am speaking on behalf of State Farm. And I do appreciate Dana's work on this and all the committee staff that gave me the time to talk to them about the bill. So just for some overview and just a real brief background that will get us to answer the questions that some of the committee members had, we did take the committee's concerns to heart. We took out the unoccupancy piece completely. We did look for a definition of vacancy, which was actually problematic because there is no other state in the country that defines vacancy as was requested in the last hearing. But we found some case law that talked about that, and we're actually pleased to find that it actually tied it into abandonment, which was one of Senator Pascavan's ideas. We gave that to Dana and worked on a committee substitute. We reviewed it with the Division of Insurance and had discussions there. And so basically the bottom line is, and this I think will help address some of the questions that were asked, now the statute, if this is passed, has several requirements, actually. One, the property must be entirely abandoned by the insured. Two, it must be devoid, basically, of contents of substantial utility. And those two things must increase the hazard that was insured against. So those are three requirements in there, and I'm going to address those very quickly. But I just want to add a couple other caveats that we know from last hearing. Please remember that insurance companies want to insure the property. And in all cases, they either issued a brand new policy or renewed this policy within the last 12 months. So something must have happened within those last few months to render them concerned about the insurability of this property. Please remember that they must, if they determine it to be now just vacant, they must send out a cancellation notice to the insured. And my guess is, there's always a lot of hypotheticals out there, but if the insured is going to get their mail and did not abandon the property and does intend to insure it, they're going to bring it to their insurance agent and work out that solution. Lastly, all of this is subject to the oversight of the Division of Insurance. If we have a situation where somebody completely abandoned the property, take out all their contents, the insurance company sees that, tries to get a hold of them, can't find them, sends out a notice, they respond to that, they don't respond to that, and then there's something wrong, then the Division of Insurance can step in and correct the mistake. So I think the answer to the questions that the committee members had is these. To Senator Giesel's question, the statute does not distinguish itself between primary residence, but it goes back to the risk insured against. So if you are insuring a homeowner's policy, the idea is that it is your primary insurance. That is what's insured. That's what's in the application. And, of course, if you abandon that and do all the requirements in the statute, it will be subject to cancellation. And the same answer response to Senator Menard's question is that you have these three requirements, and one of them is it has to increase the risk insured against. So if you're a secondary home or a cabin, I don't want to mix apples and oranges. A cabin is going to have a different policy to begin with, but the statute does not distinguish between that. And, of course, let's say your cabin situation, you're still going to have to completely abandon it, be devoid of property. And so the last question addressing Senator Menard's issues is, my reading of the case law is that devoid of substantial utility is designed to address the situation if somebody leaves a chair in there or a microwave. And that's about as definitive as you can get. It's the most restrictive in the country, but I don't think you really want to get into defining everything is fact-specific.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Winters. Questions for Mr. Winters, Senator Pascavan.
it's a significant improvement. So, you know, it's I want to commend you for working on that, because what I was to some extent worried about is a homeowner that they take a job in Texas, for example, they sell, put their home on the market, take all their furniture out, but they're still paying the mortgage, they're still paying the electric bill, still paying the fuel bill, and somehow or another they're going to get canceled even though they've done everything, so to speak, right. But as I understand right now, this vacancy endorsement that we talked last time for $30, that's where they just need to come in and talk to the insurer, and these guys aren't going to get hammered because they're not intending upon abandoning the property. It's just on the market for sale, and it's in that transition period.
Senator Pascoe, through the chair, that's correct. This definition is so limited now. It's, yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of scenarios, and someone's got to completely abandon it, and then the insurance agent's got to determine that it's completely devoid of contents of substantial utility. It's going to be difficult.
Again, Senator, I think it makes me pleased to see the improvement.
Okay, well, thank you.
Great. Senator Gissel, did you have a question? Great, Mr. Winters, thank you very much for sticking around. Director Hall, did you have a yes or no on this? Yes. Well, you're getting close to being a short timer. We'd just like to have you come before the committee.
For the record, I'm not a short timer.
You don't have to retire.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, Linda Hall, Director of the Division of Insurance currently. I have worked both with Mr. Owen and Mr. Winters on the changes in the language. I'm fine with the changes. I would emphasize that there is another step. If you have a consumer who feels that his insurance has been wrongly canceled, they are always welcome to come to our division, and we will inquire of the insurer, ask the circumstances. That's part of what we provide in our consumer services section. So we would question whether this does the three things that Mr. Winters has already enumerated. And I think that that's our general oversight authority to look at how these statutes are applied, I would call it, in the real world, and whether or not that they really meet those needs. And that's our basis to determine whether there's been a violation of statutes and regulations. So we would make a determination on that basis also. So I guess I never said yes or no, and I would say yes on this.
Great. Thank you, Director Hall, and we appreciate all the work that you put into coming to a resolve of this issue. Thank you very much, Linda. You want to give me a motion?
There we go. Mr. Chair, I move that we move the CS for Senate Bill number 157, /E, from this committee to the next committee referral, the individual recommendations, and attach fiscal note.
Is there objection? We'll take a brief at ease. Adjourned.
Thank you.
All right.